This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, and we're discussing Defending Democracy, an event going to be held October 4th at the Lynn City Hall Auditorium at 6 p.m. We have all the information up here on the post. But first, let me go to Wendy Joseph. Wendy, tell us about the event and some of the highlights as you see it that people will be experiencing on the night of October 4th.
Thank you, Bill. This forum is basically for people who understand and see the active threats to our democracy coming from 160 years back with the Civil War. We're still talking about those same issues. So we have brought together this forum where we're going to begin with a panel of an Africana scholar from Northeastern University and an ex-mayor from Beaufort, South Carolina, who lobbied during the Obama administration to get the Reconstruction National Park in his town. And what we are basically going to be trying to get across in this first panel is the importance about teaching the truth about our own American history, how it is imperative that we know what happened in the past so that we can go forward and protect ourselves in the future. We are also going to have, after that kind of heavy talking about all of our issues all together, we're then going to have a panel of the social justice groups in Lynn who are doing their work in Lynn and Essex County to defend the democracy that we're working with today. We have Secretary of Education under the Healey administration, Dr. Patrick Tutwiler, of course, the previous superintendent of the Lynn Schools, and he is going to be helping us discuss what the state thinks about this initiative and what they are doing on the state level. He's going to be joining the rest of the social justice advocates. We have Counselor Nicole McLean, who is the first African-American female to be seated on the Lynn City Council. She's also the president and founder of the North Shore Juneteenth Association. We have Martin Garner, who is the director of the Amherst College Library, and he's working with the American Library Association on the Freedom to Read initiative, discussing the issues with the uptick in book banning that's happening, another threat to our democracy. Adriana Paz, who is with Prevent the Cycle. You know, we've had some issues here in Lynn. I don't even know where to find her now. She's combing the streets right now, trying to get everyone calmed down. We have Jeff Crosby of the New Lynn Coalition, who has worked for decades to get the blue-collar workers and associated allies together to be a block to be able to lobby for their interests. We're talking about wage theft. We're talking about people not being paid after jobs. Also, the Essex County Community Organization. We have the Reverend Dr. Andre Bennett, who is the president. And this is an association of over 39 congregations, different congregations in the North Shore. And they work on various social justice issues. As a matter of the fact, I believe most of their work in the past year has been working on immigrant issues.
So it is basically history as the baseline here with current events of the issues of today, kind of connecting the two big events that we've had in the past and historical events to current events. Tom Dalton, how would you, what else could you add to all of this?
Sorry, I've been helping them out on publicity a little bit. I'm a former reporter, and I'm just so impressed by this event. When I saw what they were doing, they're taking on really some of the most crucial issues today for many, many people. I mean, what's the assault going on in many school districts on Black history? I mean, even isolating Black history, it's really a part of American history, and it should be taught. And it's like all of history should be taught, both the good and the bad and whatever happened. And many schools and many libraries, you know, are under pressure to ban books, and that's one of the biggest issues today. Voting rights, there's redistricting going on in Alabama and other states, and so what drew me to this and why I wanted to try to help them publicize it a little bit was just I could not think of more compelling issues. And when I saw who they had coming, when I saw Patrick Tutwiler was coming, the Secretary of Education, and Martin Garner is well known. He's the former president of the Freedom to Read Foundation, which is leading the charge on book banning. So it really is, it's an outstanding event. And then they've got a panel of really a lot of local people working on solutions to these issues. So I was very happy to jump in and try to publicize it a little bit, because it's really something that I think is going to appeal to a lot of people. And they're tying it to events in history. You know, they're tying it to the anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, the Gettysburg Address. And you actually have a Lincoln reenactor who's going to read the Gettysburg Address. So for kids to hear that would be great. They also have a Frederick Douglass reenactor. And as many people know, Douglass lived in Lynn. He came here as a fugitive slave. He later became very close to Abraham Lincoln, almost an advisor to him. So I'm really looking forward to hearing that, because it's just going to be fascinating. And nobody fought for civil liberties more than Frederick Douglass. So to tie him in to these current issues, I think, will be a terrific event. So,
Tom, fill us in more on Steve Matthews.
Well, I really just met Steve through this. In fact, the truth is I met him mainly on Zoom calls. You know, he's a great guy who went to St. Mary's High School in Lynn, and I believe Wendy was saying one of his sisters may still teach there. But he has tremendous ties to Lynn. He's been a labor organizer on the West Coast in California. And he wrote a 10-part series in the Lynn Item last year called Finding Mary. And the backdrop to it is that his mother was adopted, and he didn't know much about her background. And I think he was actually urged and pushed by one of his daughters to pursue it. And so he started pursuing it and found what information he could, but it was pretty hard to find things. But the path led him to take a trip to the South, and he met relatives and met people who, he went to family graves, but he discovered that his mother comes from a family that were once slaveholders. So he's a legacy of slaveholding in his family, and he was very moved by this. And after writing this series and researching so much, he wanted to reach out to people in Lynn and see if they couldn't put together some event that would address some of the current issues in civil liberties. So he just it really starts with Steve. It's an incredible backstory. He's going to be there. I don't know if he'll get up and talk or not, but his series in the Item was well read by a lot of people, and well done. And it's just a compelling backstory to what I think is a great program. So,
Wendy, what can you add about the folks, the organization here that's putting this on, and the work that's been done, and kind of the timeline to getting this, you know, up and going for this event?
Well, I believe that the Finding Mary series is probably already 2 years past, just about 2 years past, and the people on the this is a one-off. There is no Defending Democracy business or nonprofit to speak of. It is a collaboration between Steve Matthews and his story and his passion for restorative justice, and the then editor Thor Jurgensen at the time that this Finding Mary series was on. Thor suggested that Steve reach out to me as the curator of the Civil War Museum, the Grand Army, and we decided let's do this event, and it kind of created itself as we started discussing what the issues were and all of the people in Lynn who were working on such issues every single day on the ground. And then, of course, we had to include the Lynn Museum, who's been doing fabulous work on getting Untold Stories, which was the name of Danica Thurston's seminal exhibition that was up for over a year to wide acclaim. She's doing the work on the ground as well, and the Lynn Museum has really taken the banner of, especially after the COVID, when opening, to get those untold stories about the people of Lynn that are here. It's our history, it's Lynn's history, and it's made quite an impact.
Yeah, I don't know the exact timeline, but I'm guessing you've been working on this maybe not a year, but about a year. I mean, I came in very late on this, but I know they were meeting all the time and discussing it. And to get these sorts of people to come at the same time took an awful lot of work. It's probably a million phone calls. And the credit really goes to Wendy, who the curator here who runs the GR Museum, and Danica is doing an incredible job. If you go to the Lynn Museum, but Ted Grant's also been a big help. I know there's a Lynn item, and Ted and Steve, I think we're classmates at St. Mary's, or very close at St. Mary's, so that helped a lot, and the item has been really promoting this as well. But I just know they put a lot of work into it, which is why I jumped in and thought I'd try to help them. I think it's such a great program. I really wanted to get the message out to people. And it's not a long, long program. It might be 2 hours, but I think it'll be really interesting and educational. And anybody who can get over there Wednesday night, October 4th, I would recommend that they come.
Tom, you have a new book out. You did a book a few years ago on Frederick Douglass. So tell us give us any Frederick Douglass book updates if you have for us, but tell us about your new book that is out.
Frederick Douglass book update is a personal tragedy. I after finishing the book, I stumbled upon Frederick Douglass buying a house in Lynn. It's the first proof anyone's ever had he bought a house here. It was on Newhall Street, and it was the last year he lived here. So I had to go back and sort of work three paragraphs into the book. If I'd known when I started, it didn't change his life, but he came here. Everyone knows he left Lynn and went to Rochester, but there was some indication he might have been planning to stay in Lynn. I don't know if I could have made the case or not, but it was my only discovery, and I made it. I stumbled upon it after I finished the book. Well, Frederick Douglass led me to the next book, which is there was a singing family called the Hutchinson Family Singers, and they were very famous. They were packing concert halls in New York City. You couldn't even get in if you went to one of their concerts. 2,500 people. They went to England, and in Manchester, there was such a demand they had to put on extra trains to go to their concerts. So they've been forgotten today, but the Hutchinsons were huge. And the reason I got into this, when Douglass wrote his book in Lynn, Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass, which the Yale historian David Blight, who won the Pulitzer Prize for his book on Douglass, said, after the publication of that book in Lynn, Frederick Douglass became the most famous black person in the world. And I was even stunned to read that. But when he fled Lynn, after his book named so many people in the South who murdered slaves and done, he had to flee Lynn. He took the Hutchinsons with him. He asked them to go. At the last minute, they joined him, and they sang, and they traveled with him a lot. Well, at any rate, three of the Hutchinsons lived for 60 years at High Rock, and most Lynn people know where High Rock is today, that the tower is there. But I was concerned because there's one stone building left there that they built. It was the first building they built. It's boarded up. It has police take notice signs on it. But I thought, and there's no plans to take it down. The city, in fact, has put a new roof on in recent years and done a good job maintaining it. But that's such an historic piece of land. I wanted to write a book so people would know who lived there, what an incredible family they were. And I won't go on. I could go on and on about them. But they were, not only did they travel with Frederick Douglass and Abby Kelly and William Lloyd Garrison, they traveled with all the abolitionists. You couldn't get a crowd to come. When Douglass spoke, people came for Douglass, but if you said the Hutchinsons were singing, huge crowds showed up. In fact, I laughed when Douglass's farewell party was held here in Lynn. The headline the next day said, "Farewell to the Hutchinsons." That is how huge they were. And they also, Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, the first women's suffrage campaign was in Kansas in 1867. The Hutchinsons went to every stop with them. And you see these letters, they were begging the Hutchinsons to come. Here are famous people like Susan B. Anthony begging, please come. You know, people will listen to us, but if you come, crowds will come, we'll get the crowds. So they were really famous, and three of the brothers lived up on that hill, and some wild things happened I won't go into, but I enjoyed writing the book. It's a pretty good story, I'll give a plug now. It's for sale at the Lynn Museum. I don't get any of the profits. It all goes to the Lynn Museum. Anyhow, that's what I've been doing recently.
Tom, what kind of music did the Hutchinsons sing? What? Give me an idea.
I hope you're not asking me to sing.
No, I'm not.
That would be painful. They were sort of folk singers, you know, and they sang at the start. They sang popular songs and sacred music, and then one of their brothers, in fact, the brother from Lynn, Jesse, kept pushing them. Jesse was a rabid abolitionist. He kept saying, you got to start doing abolition songs. And Jesse wrote the songs. And when they went to these abolition conventions, there's one famous one where Jesse actually sang with them a lot. He was not one of the four famous Hutchinson family singers. Those were his younger brothers and sisters. He was an older brother. And he's the one who drew everybody to Lynn. But Jesse wrote these songs. And when they started singing, crowds just jumped to their feet. I saw a letter from Helen Thoreau, who was the sister of Henry David Thoreau, and she was writing to a friend about their meeting in Concord, and she said, you can't believe at the end of the meeting, everyone rose to their feet and sang with the Hutchinsons, you know. So they wrote his protest songs, you know. So the tradition that led to Bob Dylan and Pete Seeger and all these people, that really begins with the Hutchinsons. They're sort of the first American protest singers. You can make a case there are others, but you can make a case they're the first protest singers, so.
Not to be confused with the Von Trapp family singers, right?
No, but I'll tell you something. At that time, those European singers traveled this country, and they were all the rage. And there really weren't American singers. So for a while, when the Hutchinsons started, they started imitating, dressing like the Rainier family, who were like Swiss. And then that didn't last long. They realized it looked ridiculous. They were dressing their younger sister. The younger sister joined them for the first time. They sang for the first time in Lynn. 1842, she was 12 years old, this little sister. She was 12 years old, and she became the superstar. Everybody came to hear Abby Hutchinson sing. But no, they evolved and became, really started this American style of singing, and they closed every concert with the old Granite State, which Jesse wrote a song about New Hampshire and named all the family. So they also did that. They created the American style of singing, so they were...
Well, we're going to shoot around very quickly. So maybe just a closing thought from each of you on the event on October 4th here. If anything else you want to kind of put the close on to, put the final, tie it all up for us here. Anything else we didn't mention that you think we need to talk about, Wendy?
I think that you've got it. I want to just say that we are so pleased that this program has come together in this spectacular way. And if you can come to the Lynn Museum on Wednesday, October 4th, 6 p.m., we're going to do our best to make you feel that you have something to say about how this democracy goes forward.
My biggest plug is the free event. Free is in no charge. And they have 2,200 seats in the auditorium. And it really is, it's always tough to go out, you know, Wednesday night, October 4th, 6 o'clock, maybe you're thinking it's dinner time, so everybody's got to work around it a little bit. But it's one of those evenings, I think anybody concerned with what's happening in our country today will want to be there. So we're really hoping for a great crowd.
Tom Dalton, great talking with you. And Wendy Joseph, thank you so much for all this information. I'm Bill Newell, and this is MSONewsSports.com.